Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Matthew Rauch. Hi.
Who's starring in Richard III at Shakespeare Theater from February 5th to March 10th. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Now, I know it is. You mentioned before we got on here that it's probably one of the most demanding, challenging roles there is. And of all Shakespeare's roles, one of the most lines, second maybe to Hamlet.
Yeah, or? I don't know how you count them up, but it's it's certainly top five. It's a big role. It's a long play. It's a lot of words. I know you had Michael Urie, my friend, in here last year, and yeah. I think Hamlet is the biggest role. I believe Richard III is either second or third in terms of the full text. We are not doing the full text of the play. That would be nearly 4 hours long. Yeah. Nobody has patience for that these days.
What do we have it trimmed down to here?
We've trimmed, David Muse, our director, has trimmed, I'd say about 40% out of the play. One of the issues with Richard III is, first of all, it's an early play of Shakespeare's, and so there's a lot of things that are clearly a young writer sort of trying things out. And it's also a history play, so there's a lot of references to 14th, 15th century British history.
Especially British history. So if you're not familiar with that, then yeah.
A United States audience, A, is not particularly interested in, and B, doesn't know anything about.
Right.
And also because the play was written sort of as a political act to help prop up the Tudor monarchy. Mm-hmm. Much of the history in Richard III is kind of doctored,
right.
Basically a fiction. And so there's kind of three levels of wanting to cut the play to make it more palatable for a contemporary American audience. So we hope that we have done that successfully.
Yes. Yeah, so see, if you come to Shakespeare Theater, you'll get the best, richest, most relevant stuff here.
I hope so. We're hoping that that we get something fleet and swift and clear. And there's so many kind of cousins and aunts and uncles in the original play that we've combined roles. We've eliminated roles. We've taken whole scenes out. We hope we don't offend the Shakespeare purists there. But we think we've made a story that is much easier to follow and much clearer about this person's rise to power and the people who are complicit in him doing so.
Awesome. Now, you mentioned his rise to power. Before we dive into anything else, before I get any further, I always take for granted some people might not be familiar with it. So hit us with the basic premise really fast.
Richard III is the story of the Duke of Gloucester, who is the youngest brother of King Edward VI, I believe. The play begins just after the War of the Roses has ended. The Yorks have beaten the Lancasters, and the Yorkist monarchy has been installed on the throne. Richard.
That's Lancaster, not Lannister for every.
That's not the winter is coming.
Of our discontent.
And Richard's brother is installed as the King of England. Richard has been instrumental in getting him installed. He's been his general, his. He's killed many people to get the Yorks to win the war. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the play, the war has ended, and as David, our director, says, Richard is bored and decides to try to make himself the King of England, even though he's either fifth or sixth in line for the crown, and all of those people are ahead of him.
And do it by any means necessary.
And he decides to do it by any means necessary. And by the end of the play, he has become the King of England. And then by the end of the play, he is not alive anymore.
Yeah.
there are parts of the story that are true. There are parts of the story that Shakespeare made up. Nobody knows for sure what's true and what's not, but it's generally believed that much of the play is fictional. Shakespeare did a little bit of what we did with the play. He elided the history. He changed the history a little bit to suit his dramatic purposes and also his political purposes.
Right.
And I guess we're doing the same.
Let's go into that a little more. I mean, for a 2018 audience, you know, like you're saying, Shakespeare kind of modified it to, you know, the British history of the time with the references. But how's it so relevant? I mean, it's obvious, but the 28 audience is the idea of what you'll do, the hubris it takes to, you know, the people you'll throw under the bus to get to this any means necessary to become king or president or what have you.
Yes. Well, one of the first conversations I had with David Muse when this job came my way was the relevance of this play, David's take on the play, my feelings about the play, and the word that kept coming up was complicity. Mm-hmm. The truth is, the play, in terms of relevance to a contemporary audience, the play does all of the work that it needs to do. I don't need to tell anybody what the relevance of this play is, regardless of my politics.
Right.
This is a play about a man who will do anything to gain power and is who lacks all scruples. It's also a play about the people around him who both assist him, abet him, and also look the other way while he murders, discards, mm-hmm. lies, cheats, steals his way into the throne. It sounds familiar, but frankly, the relevance of it is fairly obvious.
And we've seen it. I mean, that you could have been talking about House of Cards or any other modern.
Yes.
I mean, it's over and over again.
House of Cards, draws very strongly on Shakespearean influences, yep. particularly Macbeth and Richard III. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things about Richard III, I'll just deviate a little bit, is that because it's a young play of Shakespeare's, I think it was the fifth play he wrote, there are many elements of the play that you see in a more mature fashion in later plays. There's elements of Hamlet. There's elements of Macbeth.
Do you have examples of which of those seeds you can see here and that show up later?
Or? I played Macbeth, and so I know one. There is there's a beautiful line in Macbeth, very scary moment in Macbeth when he realizes that he's kind of gone too far, and he says, I am in blood waded so far that to go o'er were the same as going. I can't remember the exact quote, mm-hmm. but there is a very similar quotation in Richard III. There's a monologue towards the end of Richard III that, in which Richard kind of recognizes his own villainy, which is in many ways similar to Hamlet's mm-hmm. sort of apotheosis of self-realization mm-hmm. in the to be or not to be speech. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things, echoes of other plays, are throughout.
Yeah.
There is a scene where a man and a woman share language in the same way that they share language in, say, Romeo and Juliet. Mm. So Shakespeare is clearly sort of trying out a lot of things that he ended up being much better at later.
Well, it's that auteur thing, man.
Yes.
You know, it's those consistent things that keep popping up, and he perfects them the further he goes. But
when I was a student, I had a teacher who used to say, when you're working on a Shakespeare play or any classic play, imagine that some person, some random person in some random town sent you this play and that it was a new play. Don't think of all of the famous people who have done it and all of the famous productions.
Don't think of Olivier.
You said it. Don't think of Olivier. Don't think of Ian McKellen. Don't think of Denzel Washington. Just imagine it's a new play. The play is the map. For if you got this play in the mail, our brilliant dramaturg Drew Lichtenberg says, if you got this play in the mail, you would think, really good young writer, needs an editor, but so much potential here.
Right.
You know, it's kind of that play. So the play, in some ways, I think is well served by an edit. David Muse is very well known to DC audiences. He's a brilliant guy, and he and Drew have done a brilliant cut of the play, I think.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's funny you've mentioned that. There was a quote on your guys' website by Muse who said that it's a tricky one to tackle. He's talking about how he edited it down. He said it can be a slog if you don't handle it right, and some of the more interesting developments are you know conveyed with just a few very short lines.
Yeah.
So you're echoing exactly what he said.
I mean, David and I, it's interesting. The first time we spoke on the phone, we shared many opinions about the play. We were very much in sync about the play.
Yeah.
If you read this play and you don't know it, it's very hard to follow. And then things will happen and you'll go, wait, how did I miss that? There's just one line, you know. So we've taken pains to accentuate what happens in the play rather than the kind of extenuating historical circumstances of the play. I think that serves the play very, very well.
Audiences will appreciate it.
I think audiences will appreciate it. They'll appreciate a production of Shakespeare that's going to be hopefully less than 2.5 hours long, including intermission.
Sure.
And they'll also appreciate a play that is about a person rather than about all these events that they don't relate to.
Sure.
I think that's the hope. You know, I don't want to speak for David. Yeah. I'm sure you've spoken to him personally.
The human story is what we're going for, rather than the historical context.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I Richard is a very complicated role to think about and talk about, because people have received notions of him and the play. When you say Richard III to people who know anything about the theater, they know the first line, they know the last line, they know the wooing scene, they know he's got a hump, and you know there's all this kind of stuff, right? But there's much more to the play than that, and I hope that we're undertaking a production that will bring some of that other out, rather than just this kind of terrible person who goes and kills a couple of kids.
Right, right, right. Well, you mentioned...
And that happens in the play.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, no, spoiler alert.
No, people know. Well, you mentioned some of the famous lines.
Yeah.
Remind us, our listeners, and go into detail on the context of two of them. I want to get to Kingdom of a Horse in a second. But first, Winter of Our Discontent.
It's the first line of the play. Interestingly enough, it's only half of the first line of the play. The first line of the play is... Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by this son of York. The winter of our discontent, of course, being the famous phrase there.
Why'd
and
that get lopped off? And
of course. In other words, people assume that it's a kind of negative, dark line.
Right.
But it's actually an optimistic thought, which is essentially the war is over.
Right.
The winter has become summer.
Right.
And it's very important to me, at least, that Richard starts the play in a place of some kind of optimism or at least neutrality. If you go out there, to me, sort of twisting your mustache at the beginning of the play, you're playing the end of the play at the beginning of the play.
Right. You got to get from point A to point B.
That's exactly right.
So you keep them neutral and then allow the restlessness, the boredom you mentioned earlier, and then the conniving.
A lot of it, you know, a lot of it happens in that speech. The speech is, I don't think any Shakespeare play begins the way Richard III begins, which with its lead character or primary character alone on stage delivering a sort of a long soliloquy, a long and difficult soliloquy.
Yeah.
It's unlike any other play. It's very scary for the actor, me, to go out there and begin the play that way.
Start with that. Hit the ground running, man.
Yeah, it's as if Hamlet started with to be or not to be. I mean, it's really that crazy.
Right.
There is an element of everybody knows what I'm going to say first.
Yeah.
But in the speech, he lays out where he's at, what he's trying to do. And he says, I've set all this stuff in motion. I don't know if it's going to work or not. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens. And he sort of gets the audience in on the secret. And then throughout the first,
see if it happens,
and throughout the first half of the play, he talks to the audience and says, oh, my God, that worked. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can do this. Oh, my God, that worked.
A little more.
Look
little
what's
more.
Happening. This is crazy. And then by the time he has become king, right after he becomes king, he basically shuts the audience out of the play until almost the end of the play.
Wow.
It's a very interesting psychological...
like a narrative device or tool.
Because he... At the beginning of the play, Richard is, he's running a game. David Muse said to me, it's as if Shakespeare wrote a play and said, I want to write a play about a terrible person, but I want to imagine that this terrible person is a great actor. Richard is a different person in every scene. He's a true chameleon. But when he becomes king, when he achieves his sort of ultimate goal, the wants and needs he has are real rather than a game.
Right.
And that, the kind of void of that for him, I think is the beginning of a paranoia, a solitude. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's all your scenes that you're mentioning.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it all builds to a horse. A horse, my
and
kingdom
then, of course,
for a horse,
it all
which
builds
we've heard
to
in everything from
My Kingdom for
Raging
a horse.
Bull to everything else.
That's right. We've heard it in The Goodbye Girl. We've heard it in Raging Bull. We've heard it. I mean, it's referred to in many pieces of type of
cinema. Set the scene if as a first timer here.
Well, Richard has become king. He is acting in ways that are increasingly despotic and paranoid. He's killed many of his allies and many of his perceived enemies, including his wife, who he woos at the beginning of the play. And a rebellion is underway, led by Richmond, who has gathered an army and is attempting to overthrow Richard's despotic reign. The historical Battle of Bosworth is depicted in the play, and Richard and Richmond fight, and Richard is killed. Spoiler alert for the 500-year-old right, play.
If
you haven't read it by now, like, you're in big trouble. And right before the Battle of Bosworth, or during the Battle of Bosworth, Richard is, this turns out to actually be historically true. He was unhorsed by someone. His helmet was ripped off and he was badly injured. Who knows whether or not he actually said this, but it's known that he was taken off his horse. And so there is a scene where he comes in sort of crying for his horse, and then he fights with Richmond and is killed at the end of the play. And I guess the resistance and hope kind of takes over. There is a sort of a hopeful message at the end of the play, Richmond's victory. For Shakespeare, he uses that as a way of ushering in the Tudor monarchy. I think in our version of the play, it's positivity and hope overcoming cynicism and paranoia.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm jacked to see it now. Again, you've been more than generous with your time. Again, everybody, it is Richard III at Shakespeare Theater, February 5th through March 10th. Matthew Rausch, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.